So I wanted to cover a couple of areas where there's been some recent progress theoretically related to understanding what happens to merger remnants. And so most of my comments will be directed at this recent discovery that low mass ellipticals have cusps, whereas high mass ones don't, apparently. And then towards the end, I'll make some comments about kinemagnetic signatures of mergers and hopes to use those as a way of diagnosing when mergers have occurred. So there are a couple of complications I wanted to emphasize at the beginning that will be running throughout the talk. The first is that there really aren't any detailed systematic studies to understand what happens during a merger. And so some of the conclusions I'll be describing are different from what Hans Walter just mentioned to you. And I suspect part of the problem could simply be due to this, that we don't have enough coverage of parameter space. And then when we discuss mergers, there are actually various types of mergers that become relevant to these issues. So I think the traditional picture people have in mind when they think about a merger, something like the antennae, which is a clear-cut case of two galaxies of roughly the same mass coming together, producing these long filamentary tail-like structures. And so generically, this type of process has become known as a major merger, where the two galaxies have roughly the same mass. But we see many examples of other kinds of mergers that could, in principle, give rise to different types of structures. So here's an example of what we might call a minor merger, where the mass ratio of the two galaxies is maybe 3 or 4 to 1 or larger. And for reasons we'll be describing shortly, this sort of merger will give rise to a different type of remnant than a major merger. In addition, there are also what we might refer to as multiple mergers, where we have many mergers going on to produce the final remnant. And recently, there's been some nice observational work by Kirk Bourne and his group, who studied ultra-luminous infrared galaxies. And what they noticed was, using these HST images, that many of these objects seem to have multiple cores, like, say, this one down here at the bottom or this one here on the upper right, where it seems to be the case that we're not witnessing just two galaxies coming together, but several, and in this case, maybe 5 or 6. And so trying to disentangle what these different events are telling us about how galaxies form is a very important question. Basically, what it turns out is that all of these kinds of events give rise to remnants that are crudely like elliptical galaxies. And we'd like to find ways to distinguish between them, because they may be telling us something about how ellipticals form. And it could be also that differences, detailed differences in elliptical properties may be related to different types of mergers if we think that ellipticals form mainly in this way. So the first main part of my talk is to discuss this issue of cusps in ellipticals and how they may have come about. And there's been a lot of beautiful work recently by the Nuker group, where they found a dichotomy between bright and faint ellipticals, where the bright ellipticals typically have very flat density profiles near their centers, but faint ones have very cuspy central density profiles. And this is illustrated in this diagram from Faber et al. In 1997, where I've highlighted just a couple of these central luminosity profiles. So the one in red shows an example of one of these constant density center ellipticals that have cores. And the blue one shows one of these cuspy-like profiles, where the luminosity profile rises all the way down to the resolution limit of the observations. And you can see by eye that there appear to be two classes of these, the ones that are shown dotted, which have rising density profiles, and the ones in solid, which appear to level out. Yeah. Right. That's right. That's right, yeah. The interesting thing is that ellipticals seem to be segregated according to this behavior by their mass. And so, for example, if we look at, say, this bottom panel here, which shows the effective radius versus magnitude, the solid points show the galaxies with cores, and the open ones show the ones that have cuspy light profiles at the center. And you can see, roughly speaking, that all the bright ellipticals have constant density cores. All the faint ones have cuspy-like profiles. And in between, there's some sort of transition zone. And so this seems to be telling us something about how these different types of ellipticals formed. So there are several types of questions that we'd like to understand. First is, how are these cusps formed? Why should there be this dichotomy between faint and bright ellipticals? And finally, are there any relationships between these central profiles and the global structure of these galaxies? And so on the first point about the formation of these cusps, turns out you can see very easily if there's a problem with understanding why this should come about. So if we imagine that at the center, the density is going like a power law, diverging as you go near the middle, then it's easy to show that that implies that the distribution function of orbits has to be diverging also. So for example, if you assume that the distribution is isotropic and rho is going like r to the minus gamma, then that immediately implies that the distribution function related to the central potential is also diverging like a power law. And it turns out for a particular choice of gamma that n is fixed. So for example, for gamma of 1 equals 1, n would be 5/2. Now, as you know, if we have a stellar dynamical process involved, then F is conserved. And so the only way to get a final state with a divergent distribution function is to have an initial state that was also had a divergent distribution function, at least in some portion of phase space. And so trying to understand where these cusps come from, if one believes that the galaxy is formed by a dissipationless process, is the same as understanding why the initial conditions had this divergence in them. Another option is that maybe there's some sort of dissipation involved. And it turns out to be not very difficult to see that this is maybe an attractive possibility. Work by a number of people have shown that if we take a gas-rich disk and subject it to a merger, that will give rise to a gas inflow producing a starburst and a stellar spike. And so this is from some work I did a number of years ago with Chris Mihos, where we looked at the outcome of mergers involving gas-rich disks. And we found that this process was sufficiently efficient to drive a lot of gas into the center. So the red line here shows the projected luminosity profile of the remnant. Then on top of that, you can see there's this central spike due to the starburst population from the gas which was driven into the center as a result of the remnant. So if one started with an object which didn't have a divergent density profile at the center, through dissipation, one could produce something that has a spike like this. And so I think this issue of where these cusps come from is very interesting. It's not settled, but this may be one way of doing it, by appealing to dissipational processes. It may turn out that this process is too efficient, that too much gas is driven to the center. And you should keep in mind that it's subject to very uncertain physics in terms of the gas dynamics and star formation. And I think there's not really any compelling observational evidence to suggest that these central density spikes exist. And so I think this issue of where these cusps come from is still an open one. Now, in terms of this dichotomy between the faint and the bright ellipticals, this may be telling us something very interesting about how merging fits into this picture. In models of hierarchic growth, we imagine that higher mass objects form by the accumulation of lower mass ones. And so it's very natural to suppose that maybe higher mass ellipticals formed by mergers of lower mass ones. And so one big question is, suppose that you have these low mass ellipticals with cusps and you merge them, can you possibly get a galaxy with a core? And the answer turns out that if you appeal to single merger events of galaxies with cusps, that the answer is definitely no. And so this is from some recent work by Fulton and Josh Barnes, where they looked at major mergers of galaxies with cuspy central density profiles. And the initial density profiles are shown by the solid, by the line, for different values of gamma as density goes like r to the minus gamma at the center. And the points show the density profiles of the remnants produced by these simulations. And you can see basically that the points lie on top of the initial density profiles, which means that in single mergers of cuspy objects, the nature of the central density divergence is preserved. And the way that we can understand that is by appealing to an argument first made by Simon more than 20 years ago, and that is that in single mergers, violent relaxation is incomplete, and it can't give rise to a lot of radial mixing in these objects. So if we have objects merging with central density cusps, the remnant will definitely retain that knowledge. And so to understand how one might get rid of these cusps in these high-mass objects, we have to appeal to other kinds of mechanisms, right? Either these high-mass ellipticals form in a completely different way from the low-mass ones, or perhaps there's other kinds of physics involved. We definitely cannot appeal to gas dynamics because that would appear to only increase the problem. If we had low mass objects with cusps and gas merging, then presumably they would give rise to higher mass ones with even more steep central density profiles. Another notion which is proposed by Ebisuzaki and others is that perhaps galaxies generically have supermassive black holes in their centers. Then if two of these galaxies were to merge, as the black holes coalesce, they'll eject stars near the center of the remnant and possibly leave behind an object with a constant density core. And so this shows some calculations done by myself and Jerry Quinlan, where we took initially an object with a central density cusp, put two black holes into it, and watched how they hardened and interacted with the stellar background. So the dashed curve here is the initial density profile. Then the solid curve are the result after the two black holes hardened at the center for different black hole masses. And you can see from this that if you were to take black holes of sufficient mass, that they can eject enough stars from the center to produce a constant density profile. So that would seem to be one way of getting around this issue. It's a tiny fraction of the mass. And so if you make the black hole mass large enough, then you can reproduce what's seen. But I do think that that's an important question. Basically, this scenario looks attractive, but it really hasn't been explored in detail. And so one of the issues is whether or not the black holes would have masses adequate to explain the observed cores. But then in addition to that, there's some other questions, like what would happen if one took unequal mass black holes and merged them? And finally, if each black hole had a star cluster around it before these black holes penetrated to the center of the remnant, then there may be some remains of these star clusters that would fill in these constant density regions. So I think the scenario is interesting, but it really hasn't been explored in enough detail to say whether or not it makes sense. Another possibility is by appealing to this other kind of merger, these multiple mergers. And there are tentative indications that if you were to take a bunch of galaxies with cusps and merge them together, that if there were a sufficiently large number of these, that the remnant would develop a constant density core. And basically this comes about because when one looks at the coarse grain distribution function, enough vacuum gets mixed into the fine grain distribution function to remove these density cusps and projections. So this shows a simulation recently done by John Dubinsky in a cosmological context. And if you focus on the bottom panels here, it shows the coalescence of three disk galaxies at the center of a cluster of galaxies. And you can see they leave behind a remnant which, at least by eye, looks like something you might associate with an elliptical. Now, I just said that if you were to take two cuspy galaxies and merge them, that the remnant that would be left behind would have a cusp. But it turns out that if you merge together a sufficiently large number of these objects, that it's possible to remove these cusps and leave a remnant which has a constant density core. And so this shows the outcome of a series of simulations Melinda Wheel did for her thesis a few years ago, where she took half a dozen of these galaxies, okay, simulation like this, allowed them to merge, and then studied the properties of the remnant. It turns out in this case that even though the progenitors had cuspy central profiles, that the remnant has a constant density core. And that's shown by these lines here on the left, which are different simulations viewed from different projections. Essentially, they all generate cores beyond the resolution limit of the simulation. Sorry, it looks inconclusive from here, you mean? Right, yeah. Oh, you mean why is it tentative? Well, the only reason I said that is that this hasn't really been done for a systematic search of parameter space. And so, for example, it's not clear if you just took three galaxies and merged them whether or not you'd get an outcome like this, or if you need six or ten. Sorry, what'd you say? I think the amount of vacuum that would be mixed into the fine-grained distribution function. And so that will depend on the nature, the detailed properties of the merger. Right. Yeah, I don't have a good answer for you, but I think that's an important question. Well, it depending on the details of how the merger goes along, the coarse grain distribution function will degrade the infinity in the center. And so I think it just depends on the nature of the orbits, how many galaxies you merge, and how complete the mixing is radially. But I can't give you a very definitive answer as to what you would expect generally to happen. In terms of this final issue of how the global structure of these objects is related to cusps, the observations show a number of interesting things. That the large galaxies with cores seem to be relatively slowly rotating and have bossy isotopes, whereas the lower mass galaxies with cusps seem to have more rotation and have disky isotopes. In addition to that, although it's not explicitly said in the paper by the Nuker group, it appears that the galaxies are segregated by the amount of flattening also. And so this plot shows their sample sorted according to magnitude with the ellipticity of the galaxy in projection. And the solid points show the ones that have constant density cores, and the circled points show the ones that have cuspy central profiles. And you can see just by eye that the spread here is larger for the galaxies with cusps than the ones with cores. And so, again, this points to the fact that these objects are intrinsically different, even if we account for projection effects. And so what's going on here? I think there was an interesting comment made by the people in this Nuker group that perhaps some of these bright E-type galaxies with cusps are actually S0s that are masquerading as ellipticals. There's been some recent work that I'll mention in a few minutes to study the formation of S0s by minor mergers that may give a way of understanding what's going on here. And so one interesting possibility of exploring is that perhaps many ellipticals formed by mergers, but that in detail the type of merger determines the detailed properties of the remnant and may explain some of these differences. And so this has been studied recently in a couple of papers by Knob and collaborators, and also Bendo and Barnes, where they compared the outcomes of major and minor mergers and looked at the characteristics of the remnants and noticed a few interesting things. That in general, the minor merger remnants tend to be disky compared to the major ones, which are both boxy and disky depending on viewing angle. The remnants of minor mergers tend to be flatter and possess more rotation than the major merger counterparts. But one problem is that both types of events give rise to cuspy remnants, depending upon what the progenitors that produce the remnants look like. Yes. Okay. All right, this shows one example from the paper of Knob, comparing a 1-to-1 merger up here, which left behind a boxy-looking remnant, and a 3-to-1 merger, which left behind something that looks disky and has more rotation. And so based on this, if one wants to believe that most ellipticals were produced by mergers, one can formulate a scenario which can, in principle, perhaps explain all of these observed properties. If we start with disks, then depending upon what types of things merge with those disks, a number of outcomes are possible. Right? If they were subjected to minor mergers, then the remnants would tend to be disky, have a lot of rotation, and if the disks had gas, perhaps had cusps due to inflow of gas. At the opposite extreme, if we merged together many of these things, then the objects that would be left behind would tend to be rounder, boxy, and the cusps would be suppressed. Right, so we might associate these types of events with the low luminosity ellipticals, and these types of events with the higher luminosity ones. But then in between, the population would be heterogeneous, and would consist of objects produced by both major and minor mergers, and perhaps also the coalescence of small groups. Now, whether or not this kind of scenario makes sense, I think, will depend upon whether or not it can produce the dynamic range that we associate with ellipticals and luminosity. Right, this sample covers about 5 magnitudes, which is about a factor of 100 in luminosity. And I don't think it makes too much sense to imagine taking 100 of these things and merging them to produce the high-mass objects. But within the context of hierarchical models, I think this is probably not a big difficulty. But we know from the kinds of work that Simon and others have done that initially there was a phase of very rapid merging in dense environments in clusters. And so it's quite plausible to imagine that these resulted in the kinds of things that we associate with these bright, boxy ellipticals that don't have cusps. Whereas later, the merging went on in lower density regions, shown by the semi-analytical work of Kaufman, Baugh, Cohen, Frank, and others. And so perhaps the things that we associate with these low-mass, cuspy ellipticals were produced through mergers in the lower density regions at later times. And so whether or not this idea makes any sense, I think, is something that will be perhaps testable by more detailed modeling in the future. Okay, I wanted to say just a few things about kinematic signatures before I quit. And let me just highlight a couple of things. The first is that if we look at different kinds of mergers, basically the remnants all show rapid rotation in their outer parts. Typically, V over sigma is greater than 1 at a couple of or 3 effective radii. And it seems to be quite generic for major, multiple, and also minor mergers. And so this illustrates this effect from the work of Bendo and Barnes, where they looked at these 3-to-1 mergers between disks. And it's hard to relate this to the sample that Hans Walter was just talking about, but they do see definite cases where V over sigma can approach 4 at a few effective radii. And so whether or not the population resulting from this kind of process can account for the rapid rotation that's seen observationally, I think is still unclear. But at least in principle, it seems to be possible. On this other issue that Hans Walter raised about galaxies that appear to have radial anisotropies, unfortunately, there really hasn't been a systematic study of this. But there are some hints that if one looks at the remnants of these multiple mergers, that at least in some cases they do produce radial anisotropy in their central regions. And in particular, the simulation that John Dubinsky did that I showed earlier gave rise to a remnant that has mild radial anisotropy at around an effective radius. And so I think that fits in pretty well with what Hans Walter was just saying. But whether or not one gets a result like that generically is still unclear. Okay, in that case, it came about because the three galaxies that merged came along a filament and had suffered a near head-on collision. But more generally, that wouldn't necessarily happen for more generic types of orbital encounters. And so whether or not this actually happens most of the time, I think, is still quite unclear. One final comment on this is that if we imagine that these constant density cores were produced by coalescing black holes, then that type of process should give rise to a very characteristic signature. And basically what you should find is that the orbital anisotropy should be very tangential at small distances. And so this shows an outcome of simulations I did with Jerry Quinlan, where we looked at the coalescence of two black holes at the center of a cuspy object. And this parameter beta just measures the anisotropy. So negative values refer to tangentially anisotropic regions. You can see in this case that depending upon the black hole mass, the region that shows evidence for this tangential anisotropy will be smaller or larger. And so if we could conduct detailed enough observations, one could simply test this hypothesis by looking for tangential anisotropies near the centers of these galaxies. And so to finish, there have been a large number of studies over the past 20 years or so that have shown that mergers of galaxies can produce objects that look like elliptical galaxies. And there's a long list of people who worked on this. And the recent work by people like Bendo and Barnes and others suggests that there may be tentative indications that these variations between types of ellipticals, and possibly also as zeros, can be explained by variations in the merger process, whether one deals with minor mergers, major mergers, or these multiple mergers. But I think to make a real connection with the observations, one has to do a much broader study of parameter space, including the cosmological context that may determine the orbital geometries that are of most interest. And so even though this is a very classical problem that's been around now for decades, there's still a lot that it can teach us about how galaxies form and evolve. And if we can make this connection in more detail between cosmological simulations and the observations, then this may teach us quite a bit still about galaxy evolution. Thank you.
In the context of this morning's talks, I can't help but wonder if the multiple merger limit that you describe might not be relevant to creating constant density cores in a cold dark matter model, relevant to the formation of dwarf galaxies.
So I guess I'm not quite sure what you mean by that. So,
Well, there has been an attempt to describe the origin of the cusps that arise in the n-body simulations of cold dark matter.
Right.
In terms of a merger history.
Right.
And the some of those analytical arguments do show that the steepness of the cusp declines as the index of the power law goes to the limit in which you have, rather than a big object merging infrequently
right.
with smaller objects, or you have essentially all scales merging at once,
yeah.
which I think is the multiple merger limit that you're talking about. So it's hard for me to resist inferring from your description that one could expect to find in a cold dark matter simulation, if the merger rate were large enough, finite density cores.
That's possible. I guess I'm not really the one to comment on that. But obviously, whether or not that makes sense would depend upon, you know, this constraint. I mean, in that case, you're dealing with collisionless dynamics. And so to produce a system which has a finite and infinite density near the center, you need to have the distribution function initially has to be diverging in some part of phase space. And so I think it may be possible to connect that constraint to the power spectrum directly. You know, whether or not such a thing would go on, I think I'm not really the one to comment on. Maybe Julio or Simon could say something about that.
I think we would dream to have that kind of thing, multiple merger and a flat core after that.
Yeah.
And we look at it in our simulations, and I guess other people did too. And before the merger, after multiple merger, no matter what you do, you have a very steep profile.
Mm-hmm.
We collided many galaxies, many halos, you know, many times in all possible directions. It's still cusping.
Mm-hmm.
My question would be, do we have a kinematics for those galaxies? And if we will take that Hund's result, assuming
right.
that velocity expression is constant
right.
to the core, that would imply R minus 2, roughly speaking,
right.
density. And you have surface density, which is constant, which means that the mass-to-weight ratio might be changing, or there's a lot of dark matter, which is a
right.
cusping, but luminous is not cusping.
Right.
Could be that explanation.
Definitely possible, yeah. Right.
You have shown that binary black holes can erase the cusps, but how much time does it take for them to do that?
Well, the dynamical time near the centers of these galaxies is very short, and so you're talking about, it will take a very long time perhaps for the black holes to coalesce, but to get to the point where they harden sufficiently to perturb the stellar background doesn't take very long. It's of order tens of dynamical times.
Just a quick comment to clarify the apparent difference of discrepancy between the 3-to-1 mergers that Bindo and Barnes did and the one that we did. It is indeed the case that some of these objects are extremely rapidly rotating. However, the galaxies we see have ellipticities between, now only flattened by 30%. 30%, while some of these are flattened, the rapids are flattened by 3-to-1. So once you turn them,
mm-hmm.
you're face on. This is, I think, largely the difference between the two. And I don't think that minor mergers are ruled out, but 3-to-1 is roughly the borderline case, which then begs the question why the mass ratio distribution should depend on mass, right? Why would it not be possible to have major mergers in that mass ratio? Or why would
Right.
Let's have one final one and defer the other comments and questions to the schedule.
Yeah, this relates to of producing the constant density core by black hole mergers, it's observed that galaxies have black holes with masses proportional to the mass of the spheroid luminosity.
The latest I've heard on that from Carl Gebhardt is basically that correlation is not as strong as thought previously. And so there's been a reanalysis of the data using more general models for the stellar motions.
Well, my question is, if there is a relation, a smooth relation,
yeah,
between the mass of the black hole and the mass of the spheroid, then isn't it a little bit of a puzzle why you should make a fairly sharp transition from cuspy to flat density cores
at
almost, a, you know, it's over a very narrow range of mass.
Definitely.
I find that puzzling.